Welcome to Generation Now, the show by and for millennials and Gen Z. I'm your host, Troy McDonald. It was just a few short weeks ago when the United States Capitol was breached on January 6th, although some people kind of just want to gloss right over that. The insurrection, I believe, started weeks before on online forums and in groups where lies were told about the election and hate was fomented and cashed in on January 6th. Now we are here left in these online spaces to navigate what to do next. Many are calling for platforms like Facebook, Twitter, and Parler to have their business models re-examined. Here to talk about how we should hold platforms accountable, please welcome my guest today, the Senior Director of Media, Culture, and Economic Justice at Color of Change. Please welcome Jade Magnus Ogunaki. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. So nice to meet you, Troy.
Nice to meet you as well. So I've asked all of my guests, particularly people of color like us, just how you're doing. This has been a stressful year and the last couple of months in particular, COVID-19 ravaging our communities harder than others. Just how are you doing?
Thank you so much for asking. You know, I think the past 4 years, you know, particularly working at a racial justice organization, have just felt like a long, weary march forward. But, you know, with the election of a new administration, which is certainly not without its flaws and problems, but just, I think, in many ways, more manageable challenges or maybe more predictable challenges, I'm feeling sort of, you know, the weight being lifted a little bit, but definitely still tons more work to do.
Indeed. I want to talk about kind of what I said at the top about this kind of, I don't want to say maybe romanticizing, but almost kind of whitewashing of what happened on January 6th. You see a lot of politicians saying, oh, well, it wasn't that bad. These were just angry people. And you came to notoriety for your work on kind of this similar kind of strain of issue with the deplatforming of organizations supporting plantation weddings or weddings held on grounds that held enslaved people. So can you talk about if you see a common thread there and why you think this is happening?
Yeah, you know, I think the insurrection in many ways, you know, our team was prepared for it. We have been studying white nationalism and its spread online for the past 4 years. And so, you know, right when, you know, the rise of Donald Trump was in many ways sponsored and engendered by this growing, more acceptable in some ways, white nationalism. And so, you know, our team was ready for it. We were looking on January 6th. I think in many ways, some of us were expecting something a little bit worse than what happened, although what happened was plenty bad. And so, you know, I think there are a couple lines of like connection. One is around like this corporate responsibility piece, or rather corporate accountability piece. You know, we were running a campaign that week, which we did end up winning, asking Stripe to no longer sponsor a, you know, they call themselves a Christian crowdfunding platform called GiveSendGo. And this is a company that's raised thousands of dollars for Kyle Rittenhouse, the young man who killed three protesters, following, I believe, the Jacob Blake shooting.
Yeah, right in our neck of the woods here in Kenosha.
Yes, absolutely, in Kenosha. And, you know, they had also raised countless, I mean, I think tens of thousands of dollars for Enrique Tarrio and the Proud Boys, sponsoring their transportation, their food, their beverages. And, you know, when we first started this white nationalist work, there were plenty of people who told us that the Proud Boys were not a big deal, had nothing to do with white nationalism, and we were overstating the case. You know, fast forward 4 years and you see this group, you know, which has many ties to militia groups, far right groups. And as a white nationalist group themselves, you know, sort of lead this charge in, you know, bursting into the Capitol, stealing computers, peeing and smearing feces on the walls, you know, and, you know, killing, you know, people were killed. You know, they literally beat a police officer over the head with a fire extinguisher until he died. So, you know, at Color Change, it's been interesting because we've been ringing this alarm for a really, really long time, particularly with these tech companies. You know, we first rolled out our Kick Trump Off Twitter campaign, August 8th, 2017. Trump was escalating nuclear war with North Korea. And we've been continuing to run that campaign. And when I say run that campaign, I don't just mean sending a petition. We've been in deep conversation and deliberation with the folks at Twitter for a really long time. And, you know, we saw Trump publicize the insurrection. He said, see you January 6th. You know, he was a part of planning it. He was a part of promoting it. And these tech platforms definitely in many ways have blood on their hands for the ways that they've allowed this sort of white nationalist organizing and anti-democracy organizing to proliferate on their platforms.
Is there a sense of, I mean, I don't want to say vindication, but when you're doing this work years back, and Twitter with what, 2-3 weeks left in President Trump's term makes the decision, right? Talk about the constant stick-to-itiveness that you have to have as an organization to not give up, because it eventually those campaigns did actually work out in your favor.
Yeah,
and democracy's favor.
Yeah, you know, I think in many ways, they sort of did their work at the 11th hour, you know. To be honest, promoting the insurrection might not be the worst thing Trump's done on Twitter. You know, he's called out private citizens. You know, they've received death threats on our lives, called for violence against protesters, you know, in the racial justice protests over the summer. And so, you know, it can be draining, particularly these work with corporations, because we know corporations don't have hearts, don't have souls. They just have bottom lines. And it's dependent on their bottom lines, which is how they make decisions. You know, at this point with Democrats in control of both chambers of Congress and the presidency, it's now politically and financially advantageous for Facebook and Twitter and these other companies to suspend Trump. But they've had a moral charge to do that for a really long time. And so while we're super glad to see Trump off Twitter, I think the nation collectively has sort of like a clear mind, you know, not having to like be on pins and needles all the time thinking about what is Trump going to tweet. I think in many ways, some of the damage has really, really been done, particularly with the spread of disinformation. You know, we were some of the people pushing for them to put labels on Trump's tweets about the election, because we knew ahead of time he was going to, you know, before the election, we knew that Trump was going to say that there was cheating and that there was voter fraud, even though it's been proven time and time again that there has not been. And so I think, yeah, we have a little bit of a sense of vindication, but for us, we're concerned about the increasing online polarization of Americans. We're concerned about the radicalization of Americans into these like super far right conspiracy theories, and how those impact all of us every day. So it feels a little bit like a victory, but it's a little bit scary how, you know, the way disinformation and conspiracy theories and white nationalism have spread on these platforms for 4 years. In many ways, it doesn't feel like we have a lot of recourse in this time.
You talk about how you and Color of Change were looking at this social data, seeing this kind of rage machine gear up for what eventually took place on January 6th. But a few weeks ago, you had Sheryl Sandberg, an executive at Facebook, say, oh, well, we were not a part of this. What do you make of the finger pointing and obfuscation of these platforms saying, ah, it's not me, it's Parler, it's all these? How do we assess? I don't want to necessarily, well, I guess you could say blame, partial blame for what happened.
I mean, you know, Sheryl Sandberg pointing the finger at Parler, which is like a fairly new, you know, social media network, which is absolutely wild to us, you know. I'm like, so, you know, over the summer, Kyle Rittenhouse actually like planned, him and his militia friends planned to like go to this rally in Kenosha and shoot people on Facebook. You know, that's pretty freaking serious. You know, the QAnon groups, the anti-vax groups, the blatant like white nationalist groups, including like police officer, you know, social groups that have been spreading on Facebook where, you know, they dox private citizens, they dox protesters, they threaten violence and even death against them. All of these things happen on Facebook. And, you know, I think it's important to say, I know I said it earlier, but like these corporations don't have hearts and souls. They just go with whatever it looks like, the way the wind is blowing. You know, the disconcerting thing to me is that, you know, there's a great chance that if Donald Trump had been reelected, we wouldn't see any change at all in the way that these platforms are dealing with these issues. They're moving this way because it's politically and financially advantageous, and they feel like Americans are ready for a change, that they're following the change. But the truth of the matter is, you can't go into your local Whole Foods or your local Kroger and stand in the middle and threaten violence against people in there. You can't go in the, you know, in the middle and threaten, you know, yell out white nationalist slogans and things like that. Immediately you will be, you know, pushed out of the store, right? And Facebook and Twitter have operated like Whole Foods or Kroger's, where they're just letting you rant on and on and on, poisoning the environment all around you and making it unsafe for others. And so, yeah, we see what they're doing, but we're going to keep our foot on Facebook and Twitter's necks, no matter who's president, because there is all, you know, they're continuously violating civil rights. They're continuously making environments that are totally unsafe for Black people and low-income people. And what we're pushing for long term is regulation for these social media platforms, because they simply have too much power and influence over the way that, we think.
And there's been a really robust conversation on really both sides for very different reasons about regulation. You had the former president, Trump, say, oh, well, we need to get rid of Section 230. You've had Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz make statements as well. What do you make about this Section 230 argument? And for those who don't understand it, maybe if you want to break that down, but is that a valid request? Is that something that should be looked at?
You know, I don't know if it's a valid request. You know, the truth of the matter is that Donald Trump and Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz, you know, they, you know, when white national, when they were allowed to spread like white nationalist and far right propaganda all over these social media platforms, they had zero problem with that. You know, they had zero problem with the ability to spread disinformation all over these platforms. And now that platforms are regulating what they say, and when I say regulating what they say, I mean they're literally putting a label saying this is factually untrue. This is when they have a problem with it. You know, overall, these people are grifters. They're political grifters. You know, you see Ted Cruz trying to tag on to AOC at this point to try to regain, you know, some sort of influence or, you know, relatability. But the truth of the matter is we haven't forgotten about Josh Hawley or Ted Cruz. We are definitely supporting Representative Cori Bush's bill to get them expelled from Congress. They were vital and very important parts of the insurrection, and they put the lives, you know, five people, I believe, were killed. And on top of those five people, they put the lives of their fellow Congress people in major danger.
So there's the argument that, and it is a fear of mine, that if we banish this kind of conversation on Facebook, that they will go to kind of decentralized and encrypted channels like Signal and others, where it's very hard to track them, or a Parler that will not abide by any sort of rule or regulation, right? What do you say to that? Is it better to dance with the devil we know than one that we don't?
Yeah, you know, I think that number one, these people are not going to go to, they're not going to ultimately decentralize and go to Parler, because what they really enjoy and what they love is debating, arguing, and harassing people on social media. So, you know, we've seen so many conservatives say like, oh, Parler sucks because like it's just all people on the same mind. But I want to be really clear in that, like, we're not trying to, you know, ban or censor people with opposing viewpoints, even like, you know, Republican or super conservative viewpoints that are, you know, oppositional to our framework or our way of living. What we're trying to do is stop the spread of violence and white nationalism. You know, what happened with Donald Trump's presidency was quite unique, because with the rise of white nationalism online, they were no longer wearing KKK hoods. You know, they replaced them with gelled hair and hard shoes and had this rebranding to like white, you know, American chauvinism or Western civilization pride. And so in many ways, it's become quite normal to us for us to see this like new rebranding of white supremacy and white nationalism. We also know that when Donald Trump got kicked off Twitter, there are reports that say disinformation decreased by 70% on the platform. So deplatforming is incredibly important for people who are spreading violence and disinfo, because, you know, we've never been at this place in history before, I think, in the history of civilization, with the way that information is spread and consumed. And none of us have the answers about what would make it the most safe or the most equitable in terms of taking in reading news articles or taking in information. And we know that, you know, while like we don't like anti-vax stuff spreading on social media, we know that like for many people, particularly Black people, it, you know, it's important because there's been histories of medical racism. And I say that all that to say is that like we're not trying to just stamp out viewpoints that we don't agree with. That's not what's happening at all. We're really trying to zoom in on the things that are harmful or violent to other people. And that's not, you know, it's a lot of viewpoints, but it's not so many. You know, I think there are plenty of conservative or far right people who are on social media who don't really have a problem because, you know, they're not calling to storm the Capitol or to kill Black protesters or anything along those lines.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. We're really entering a unique phase, as you mentioned, and I guess we're in one, but we're continuing to head towards one. We're heading towards 2022, and I want to touch on voting rights as well, because that's another tenet of Color of Change. You've seen some officials in Georgia blatantly say that if we do not change the rules of elections in our state, then Republicans will not win, or they're concerned that they will not win. I'm fearful that this is almost a sugar high, right? Because the guardrails of democracy held. People counted the votes the right way. People certified this was not a fraudulent election. Are you worried about 2022? You see the Oregon GOP announce that they want to look over the votes before they send them for certification, right? There's all these kinds of maneuvers happening in the background for next cycle. What is some of the work that you're doing to kind of counteract some of this?
Yeah, you know, I think the GOP is scared because it's been proven that when access to voting is expanded, then they lose. And, you know, Color of Change has been fighting for, you know, expanded access to, for the right to vote, and we're going to be continuing to see it. You know, we can't deny the power of like mail-in voting this year, which, you know, we needed because of a literal pandemic. But it's something that should continue. You know, states should continue having mail, you know, vote by mail and drop off, you know, ballots in every state. And, you know, Color of Change is continuing to access, you know, expand access to free and fair elections all over the state. But, you know, I think the GOP has a reason to be nervous because, you know, as I said, when people have access to vote, they lose. It's, you know, it's typically by voter suppression and gerrymandering that Republicans are able to sort of eke out these wins.
Absolutely. Actually, this happens, folks. I missed a question and I want to go back to it because I wanted to kind of touch on free speech, because I know there's a lot of you listening that feel that Facebook or Twitter, that these are open platforms, that we have the right to just say whatever we want. And you had the brilliant analogy of going into a Kroger or a Pick and Save as we have here. It's just starting to, like, you wouldn't even think about doing that because you'd be kicked out immediately and refuse service. So could you talk about some who say, well, these platforms are utilities, and so I can say whatever the hell I want?
Yeah, you know, I think there are people who are free speech absolutists out there. I'm not one of those people. You know, particularly, you know, I think for me, you know, my long-term dream is for social media companies to be regulated by the government, and perhaps even owned and controlled by the government, with, you know, and actually be used as utilities. And we can like talk about shifts right now. But as for now, they're multi-billion dollar companies. And these multi-billion dollar companies benefit from disinformation. They benefit from the spread of lies. They benefit from conflict. And that's why it's been allowed to go on for so long. You know, that, you know, they benefit from the, also these echo chambers with people going down these spirals, you know, and they benefit from the bots and the creation of these accounts. And so I think it's important not to think about, you know, social media companies as utilities, but more as what are the intentions of a multi-million dollar and in some cases billion dollar companies. Why do they feel like it's okay to, why do they regulate some people harder than others? You know, we found that Black activists on these platforms are regulated and moderated more severely than white nationalists, you know? And so I think another thing to lift up is that companies are not just companies, there are people within companies who make decisions. And, you know, you see someone like Joel Kaplan at Facebook, who has certainly enabled like the spread and the rise of like conservative ideology all over the platform. There are nefarious actors and these social media platforms are those nefarious actors. I believe that people should have the right to say what they want. And when I say have the right to say what they want, they shouldn't be put in jail for saying what they want, but that doesn't mean they shouldn't be kicked off of a platform. I mean, any of us cannot go run in a movie theater right now and yell out fire. We will get in big trouble. And it's the same thing to plan a literal insurrection on a social media platform. You know, it's totally unheard of. You know, in schools, when they hear of students planning violence, they don't just say, oh, well, it's free speech. They actually go and, you know, if they hear about it ahead of time, they stop those students and they apprehend them beforehand. And it's the exact same thing that should have happened. The truth of the matter is we would not be in this place as a country politically or spiritually or mentally if these platforms had taken more control of these situations early on, if they hadn't allowed white nationalism and disinformation to fuel them and bring in millions and millions of dollars.
Preach. No, that's the truth. So there's talk right now that President Trump might be allowed back, at least on Facebook. The decision to whether or not to bring him back has been sent over to the Facebook Oversight Board, which is basically the Supreme Court of Facebook, where there's at least 20 members that should be expanding to 40. You said earlier that these companies kind of, they don't have hearts, they don't have souls, they kind of move with the wind here. Do you think the winds could potentially change back in the favor of allowing Trump back on a Facebook at least?
Oh, absolutely. I put nothing past Facebook, and nor do I put anything past any corporation. Definitely think we could see a future where Donald Trump is allowed back on Facebook. And, you know, when you look at, like, you know, the top 10 Facebook posts for the day, you know, like anyone can look them up. Donald Trump is usually like number one or number two. And these companies truly are driven by profit. They're driven by money. And so when you have someone who's getting tons of interaction, tons of clicks, both positively and negatively, I totally believe that Facebook would allow Donald Trump back on the platform. I mean, I would hope that they wouldn't, but it's definitely not out of the bounds of reality that Donald Trump would be allowed back on Facebook. I think it's certainly possible and we should definitely prepare for it.
Yeah, and I guess this is, I mean, I don't want to assume an answer, but this could be tied to this, but Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg announced this week, oh, well, you know, we're going to downrank, we're thinking about downranking all political conversations, saying that, you know, people don't want their experience ruined by politics and infighting. Again, do you think that's just a market move? Do you think there's any sincerity to that point on Facebook?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Facebook and Twitter totally benefited from the Trump outrage machine. You know, and we were rightfully outraged with all of the totally unjust and ridiculous and blatantly racist and xenophobic things Trump did every day. I think it's interesting now that, like, in my mind, we're at a time with the Biden-Harris administration where we need to be paying attention to politics more closely than ever. Not because it's like exciting or even like shocking the way the Trump administration was, but because, you know, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and the rest of the Democrats in the House and the Senate were elected because we wanted, we saw them as able to deliver some of the things that we needed, including, like, you know, guaranteed basic income and a living wage and, you know, expanded access to healthcare, you know, maybe Medicare for all for some of us. And right now, more than ever, we need to be putting the pressure on them and letting them know that just because Donald Trump is no longer in office, that doesn't mean that we're stopping paying attention to politics. So, yeah. I find it really, really interesting that Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook want to, you know, downplay political conversations when more than ever we need to be having conversations about politics and how to hold, you know, administrations accountable for the things that we need as Americans.
We have a few minutes left here on Generation Now. I'm Troy McDonald on WGTD 91.1 FM. I'm here with the Senior Campaign Director for Color of Change, Jade Magnus Oganaki. Jade, you kind of touched on this a moment ago about the Biden administration, how we have to hold them accountable. Are you seeing traffic or interest in politics decrease? Is it harder for you to mobilize community? Because a lot of people feel, hey, well, Biden's in, I don't have to think about politics anymore. Is it harder to mobilize in this environment compared to one where people's lives were literally at stake every day?
Yeah, I mean, we're not seeing that it's harder to mobilize Color of Change members particularly. You know, that's not what we're seeing. But, you know, I do think it's normal for there to be a decrease in paying attention to politics. You know, the past 4 years have been traumatic and horrifying for all of us to witness, and also truly chaotic. So, you know, I'm not seeing a change from Color of Change members, but I do think that, like, people expect government to be normal and function on a very basic level. I think Joe Biden, Kamala Harris are going to be able to, like, meet the needs of those people who just, like, kind of don't want to hear about it. But there are a lot of us who want more, and we want more for the government, and we're just not okay with, like, a decent government plugging along. And so that's our Color of Change members, and that's what we're going to be fighting for, 7 million strong. You know, we're fighting for economic security for Black and working class, low-income families. And we're fighting for a world where a Black child can walk down the street and not be accosted or even killed by a police officer. And we're fighting for a world in which, you know, your child can be on Facebook or Twitter and not see white nationalist propaganda and be swept up into its, like, seductive nature. So that's what we're fighting for, and that's what we're going to be continuing to fight for.
Incredible. Final question here. If you could go back to the version of yourself 4 years ago at the beginning of the past administration, knowing what you know now, I usually ask this question about, like, what would you say to yourself? Right. And you can answer it that way. But what would you say to the platforms, Facebook, Twitter?
Yeah, I mean, I would say to them what we always said, which is that, like, this spread of disinformation and white nationalism is going to have a bloody and violent, you know, violent end on the platforms. And while you're playing nice with disinformation and white nationalism now, it's going to sink your reputation. It's going to sink people's faith in your platforms. And that's exactly what you need to continue on and to thrive. So, it's what we said, you know, I guess some people have to learn their lessons the hard way. And that's unfortunately Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah. Let's hope that, we never have to repeat some of this, but as so many people much smarter than I have said, history may not repeat, but it tends to rhyme. So thank you. I cannot thank you enough, Jade, for your time and being on the program today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Troy. Have a fantastic day.
Jade Magnus Oganaki is the Senior Director of Media, Culture, and Economic Justice at Color of Change. Until next time, bye, everybody.
Support for WGTD comes from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, offering a degree in health information management technology for today's modern medical field. More information is available online at uwp.edu.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Racine Women for Racine Justice has a new website and is accepting tax-deductible donations. Visit rwrj.org for more information.
This program originally aired on November 14th, 2020.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion.